The Christian in Complete Armor by William Grinnell. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 18, chapter 55. How to deprecate the evil of suffering. The second object of deprecatory prayer is suffering. Sin brought suffering into the world. Sin is indeed the elder twin, but suffering stayed not long after it, for it took it by the heel, arresting Adam upon the very place where he committed his trespass, and ever since follows it as close as a shadow doth the body. It leaves not the saint till death parts him and his sin, but pursues the wicked with their sins into the other world also. So that this distribution of suffering into temporal and eternal should suffice, because it comprehends all the miseries which sin hath brought upon the sons of men. First, temporal sufferings. How the Christian is to deprecate and pray against them, which I shall do two ways. Section 1. First, negatively. The Christian is not to pray for an immunity from all temporal sufferings. There is no foundation for such a prayer in the promise, and what God thinks not fit to promise, we must not be bold to ask. God has one Son without sin, but none in this life without suffering. John writes himself, "Your brother and companion in tribulation." Revelation 1:9. He had too high an opinion of himself that would have God lead him dry-shod to heaven while he sees the rest of his brethren march through thick and thin to the same place. Or who thinks he needs not this thorn of suffering to keep him as well as others from wandering out of his way to glory? The rod is not more needful to children than suffering is to the saints while on earth. While thou art subject to sin, thou must submit to his disciplinary rod. Valetudinarian, or somebody who is overly concerned about his body, valetudinarian bodies can as well do without food as physic, and saints in this state may as well live without ordinances as sufferings. In a word, to pray absolutely against all suffering is to desire one of the greatest punishments on this side, hell. When God said, "I will not punish your daughters when they commit whoredom," Hosea chapter 4, verse 14, he meant them no good by sparing his rod. If we count him an unwise father, who, when he puts his child to school, desires the master not to whip him, surely much greater folly were it in thee to desire God to privilege thee from all suffering. Secondly, affirmatively, deprecate the vindictive justice and wrath of God in all temporal sufferings. Jeremiah 10:24. O Lord, correct me, but in judgment, not in thy anger, lest thou bring me to nothing. In chapter 17, verse 17. Be not a terror unto me, thou art my hope in the day of evil. He declines not suffering, but deprecates wrath, as if he had said, "Let trouble come, but not with this message to tell me that thou art mine enemy. Shoot thy darts, my breast is open to receive them, but let them not be envenomed arrows headed with thy punitive justice. Without the sting, all suffering is innocent and harmless. But if the creature does fear, though without just cause, that they are shot a justice bow, then they drink up his spirits. When thou with rebukes doth correct man for iniquity, thou makest his beauty to consume away like a moth." Psalms 39:11. That holy woman, 1 Kings 17:18, was not so much distressed for her son's death as for the reflection this sad providence made upon her conscience. "Art thou come to call my sin to remembrance and slay my son?" Thou canst not, therefore, be too passionately importunate in deprecating this. Thirdly, deprecate the snare and temptation that suffering may expose thee to. Satan commonly finds it easy to make some sinful impression upon the saint when his heart is made soft, as Job phrases it, in the furnace of affliction. He is a rare Christian in whom the stream of his grace runs clear under such circumstances. Job was a man of 1,000, none like him in all the earth, a perfect and upright man. Yet he betrayed many weaknesses in his troubles, and would have done more had not God, in pity to his poor servant, taken the devil off before he had quite run him down. Christ teaches us to pray against suffering under the notion of temptation. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. That is, let us not be led into sin when we fall into suffering. Let us not fall into thy hands and Satan's together. This discovers a holy frame of heart to be more tender of our conscience than of our skin. Not so much to fear affliction from God, as at least in it we should have ourselves unseemly towards him. Igar is not so much ashamed to beg as afraid to steal, and so take the name of God in vain, upon which account he chiefly prays against poverty. Proverbs 30, verse 8 and 9. Self-denial is the best self-seeking, for by neglecting ourselves for God's sake, we oblige him to take the care of us upon himself, and he is the only happy man whose sole dependency is upon God. Fourthly, deprecate the excess of suffering, that thou be not overladen. This is promise. Thou mayest therefore present it in faith. Jeremiah 46, verse 28. I will make a full end of all the nations whither I have driven thee, but I will not make a full end of thee, but correct thee in measure. The patient doth not entrench upon the physician's art by desiring him to proportion his dose according to the weakness of his body. If, when he hath done, he acknowledges his skill and faithfulness. Indeed, to desire God to consider our weakness and then not to rely on his wisdom and care, but continue jealous and suspicious, or to murmur at his prescriptions as if the physic he gave were too strong, is to make a dishonorable reflection upon him. Sometimes the physician exceeds the proportion that his fearful patient thinks enough, but withal tells him, you are not so weak as you take yourself to be. Your body may bear so many grains more in the composition. Leave me to my art, and all shall be well. Thus God, who knows our frame, deals with his people, and is highly pleased to see them satisfied with what he orders them. In all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. Chapter 1, verse 22. He did not impute folly to God. The meaning of the place is, Job did not make any unworthy reflection upon God for the evils he suffered by his providency, as if anything were wanting in his care or wisdom. Fifthly, thou mayest not only deprecate these evils in thy afflictions, but pray believingly for a happy issue out of them. The darkest lane of suffering shall to the saint have a lightsome end. Ye have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. James 5:11. This is what God intends in all his saints' troubles, and he takes pleasure in thinking of it before him. I know the thoughts that I think towards you, saith the Lord. Thoughts of peace, Jeremiah 29:11. And that petition comes in a happy time to court, which finds the king thinking of the very business. Section 2. The second kind of suffering is eternal. This is the center in which all the lines of sin and misery meet, the common shoal or shallow place into which they all disgorge themselves, as rivers do their streams into the ocean, and as rivers, when they are fallen into the sea, lose their several names in one that comprehends them all, the ocean. So all the evils of this life, when resolved into this, forget their private names, sickness, pain, poverty, etc., and they're called hell. Not that these are all formally and literally there, but virtually in the torment of the damned, doth not only amount to, but beyond expression exceeds them all. As in heaven there is no worldly cheer, yet a feast, no silks and satins, yet all glorious robes, and indeed that which is infinitely of more value and worth than the most precious things the earth can boast of, so the great miseries of this life are incomparably less than the least torment of hell. Never can any creature say he is completely miserable till the jaws of that infernal pit enclose him. There is the sinner's easeless, endless state. He shall continue forever in the height of his paroxysm, no change of weather or hope of clearing, but a perpetual storm set in to rain fire and brimstone upon him to all eternity. Now, in the deep reading this, we should endeavor to keep this threefold notion in our thoughts, for which above all we are to desire to be delivered from it. First, conceive of hell as a state of sin as well as of suffering, yet in its utmost height. Earth is a middle place between heaven and hell. Neither sin in the wicked nor grace in the saint come here to their full ripeness, grace being of outlandish slip, brought from heaven's paradise, raises not to its just height till it be transplanted to its native climate from which it came. And sin, being a child of hell, comes not to its fullest complexion till it be sent back to the place it came from. Here poor wretches are enticed to sin by the pleasure it promises, but there they sin out of malice, for nothing else can invite them. On earth the sinner conceals the venom which is in his heart, but in hell he spits it out in blasphemies against heaven. In a word, where he sins with wandering thoughts and some weak purposes of repenting, but there he is as desperate as the devil himself, hardened beyond all relenting. Certainly the saints, to whom the motion of sin in this life is so grievous, above all the crosses and losses that befall them, and who count a few years' neighborhood among the wicked so great an affliction that they cry, "Woe is me that I sojourn in Meshach and dwell in the tents of Cedar," must needs deprecate that dismal state with their utmost vehemency of spirit, wherein they should be everlastingly yoked with sin and cooped up with unclean sinners. It was the speech of a gracious woman when near her death, "O Lord, send me not to hell among such filthy company, which thou knowest I have not liked on earth. But as for those who can agree so well with their lust in the company of the wicked here, I know not how they can thus deprecate that place where they shall meet with that which pleases them so much on earth." David first protests his abhorrence of the ways and society of the wicked. "I have not sat with vain persons, neither will I go in with dissemblers. I have hated the congregation of evildoers, and will not sit with the wicked." Psalms 26, verse 4 and 5. Then his zeal for God and the delight he had in his house to praise and serve him. Verse 6 and 8. After which he breaks out into his prayer. Verse 6. "Gather not my soul with sinners, nor my life with bloody men." As if he had said, "I abhor the society in my life. O let me not be sent among them at my death. I have praised thee on earth. Send me not to blaspheme thee in hell. I have loved the habitation of thy house. Let me not dwell with unclean spirits hereafter." Secondly, hell is a state of separation from the blissful presence of God. Pray to be delivered from it under their notion, as it is the everlasting excommunication of the creature from hell. "Go, ye cursed," that is, never to see my sweet face any more. Called, therefore, outer darkness, because there is not the least beam of his favor to enlighten the souls of the damned, nor the least crevice left open for hope to expect it. The heat of hellfire is not so dismal as the want of light that makes them cursed. go ye cursed. The curse lies in their departure from God, the fountain of blessing. All besides this were tolerable. Would God cast but one kind look upon those miserable souls as they swam in the lake, it were able to change the property of the place, and the joy thereof were enough to take away the sense of their torments. The three worthies in Daniel could walk in the fire, having God to bear them company as if they had been only in the sunshine. That which a saint prizes most in heaven is the presence of God. So shall we ever be with the Lord, 1 Thessalonians 4:17. And hell is most dreadful by them, because the gulf is fixed between the souls in it and God, that no communion can be had with Him to all eternity. Oh, how few pray against hell under this notion. How few cry out with David, "Cast me not away from thy presence," Psalms 51:11. If this were the thing above all they feared should befall them in the other world, would they so willingly live without acquaintance with God in this? Surely not. Thirdly, hell is a state wherein the damned can never actually satisfy God's justice, for their debt being infinite and they but finite. They will ever be pained, but the last farthing can never be paid, which is the only reason they lie forever in prison. But Christ, the saint's paymaster, discharged their whole debt at once and took in the bond, which he nailed to his cross, leaving no back reckoning unpaid to bring the believer afterwards into any danger from the hands of divine justice. Now, as an ingenious debtor desires his freedom at his creditor's hands, that thereby he may be capable of paying his debt as well as to escape the misery that himself should endure by his imprisonment, so an ingenious soul, and such as every saint, deprecates hell as well as an eye to God's glory, as to his own ease and happiness. O, saith he, send me not to blaspheme thee among that wretched crew of damned souls and unclean spirits, when I so much desire to join with the choir of holy angels and saints in singing hallelujahs to thy holy and glorious name. End of chapter 55.